It was a time when legends ruled the skies.
It was filled with a sense of invincibility.
And one legend, time and memory has not eroded. The tale of the Great Red Baron.
April 21st, 1918, just a few feet from this spot, Manfred von Richthofen took his last breath.
The unbeatable German ace, that menace of the skies, was shot down by a single bullet.
It would pass through the liver, through the heart, and through the two main blood vessels of the body.
Who fired the bullet that killed the Red Baron?
Now, unsolved history goes back in time. And in the fields of France, guns blaze again, shooting down a mystery that has baffled historians for 80 years.
This machine is absolutely bloody fantastic.
Spot on, isn't it? Anyway, you point it.
It is.
On Unsolved History.
Fire!
World War I, the Great War, an event that today, in the 21st century, feels impossibly remote. But one man's name lives on from that war, Manfred von Richthofen. In 1918, he was Germany's picture postcard celebrity, a 25-year-old aristocrat, the leader of a crack squadron that terrorized its Allied rivals. An expert flyer, a supreme marksman, and so confident of victory that one day in 1917, he painted his plane a bright shade of red, a gaudy invitation to his enemy to try and shoot him down. Many tried, many died trying. Von Richthofen's legend grew.
Manfred was a star. He became a star because the high command needed success. And they didn't have much of success on the ground. So they made these pilots heroes.
Richthofen shot down 80 planes, more than any other pilot during the war. But on April 21st, 1918, the Bloody Baron finally became a victim himself. The day he died, a mystery began. Who shot the Red Baron? Over 80 years later, the mystery remains. Incredibly, Unsolved History tracked down a link to the events of that spring day so long ago. A link that led us to a quiet Australian town.
The front itself, it was pretty grim. Water in the trenches. The rats were as big as cats. You were never free of shells or bombs. It was constant. Shocking wounds, terrible wounds. That many you couldn't count them.
Ted Smout witnessed countless deaths in that terrible war. Today, only one stands out.
When he's lying there, dying, I felt no pity for him at all.
Smout is the last living eyewitness to the events of April 21st, 1918. He not only saw the Baron shot down, he watched Germany's greatest ace die right in front of him.
Oh, it was a clear day. We were out in a rest area, less than a kilometer behind the line. We were actually making a cup of tea. You see these planes having a dogfight up above the front line, and then a couple of them peeled off. We saw this red triplane coming down.
Smout caught sight of the plane only because the Baron had made a serious mistake. He chased a British plane into Allied territory. All of a sudden, von Richthofen flew into a storm of bullets.
Made a fairly good landing, but when he landed, it slewed around to the right.
To this day, what sticks in Smout's mind most is the nature of the Baron's fatal injury.
Everyone was having a pot shot. That was the amazing thing. He only got one bullet.
Scores of shooters, thousands of bullets, but only one shot killed the Baron. Who fired it? Many differing accounts of the events of April 21st exist, but these are the basic facts. Around 10:45 a.m., a dogfight erupts over German lines between two squadrons, one Allied group and the Red Baron's famous flying circus. Lieutenant May, a young Canadian pilot on his first combat mission, breaks away from the pack and starts running for home. The Allied pilots were flying a then state-of-the-art Sopwith Camel biplane. Top speed, 130 miles per hour in level flight. Weaponry, two machine guns mounted on top of its engine, fitted with a special gear to fire between the blades of the propeller. 10:55, the Baron gives chase. Richthofen's Fokker DR-1 triplane had a top speed of only 110 miles per hour. But it was highly maneuverable, more than a match for the Camel. As for the Red Baron's combat skills, they were unparalleled. 80 men had tried to beat him. All had failed. Soon, the Camel and the triplane are rushing westward down the Somme Valley, almost clipping the treetops, and nearly hitting the church steeple of a French village called Vaux-sur-Somme. Squadron leader Roy Brown sees his compatriot under the guns of the Red Triplane and dives down to help. 10:58. Captain Brown puts in a burst of fire and sees the Red Triplane veer to the right. Brown pulls up and heads off to the northeast to the aid of another British plane. Around that same moment, Australian gunners on the ground open up on the Red Triplane. 11 a.m. The Baron's plane is down in a field near a chimney stack. He's still alive, but seconds after Australian troops get there, he's dead. The cause? A single bullet wound through the chest. What happened in those last 2 minutes of Manfred von Richthofen's life?
Well, at first glance, it looks almost impossible to determine who was responsible for his death. Because of the fluid action, the number of people firing at him, bullets are flying from every direction. There's hills, there's valleys, there's trees, and so there is no one that sees all of the action. They see snippets of it.
Just who killed the Baron? Was it Captain Roy Brown, the brave Canadian pilot who rushed to rescue his companion in distress? In a war with few heroes, everyone wanted to believe that Roy Brown's chivalrous action took down the Baron. Many still want to believe that today. But there were other stories on that day, told by men whose names history has almost forgotten. Snowy Evans, Robert Buey, Cedric Popkin. Three unheralded machine gunners on the ground who also fired at the Red Triplane. Could one of these men have killed the Red Baron? Could history be wrong? By using the technology of the 21st century, Unsolved History will recreate the events of April 21st, 1918. We've assembled an expert team to help us in our investigation. Michael Selleck and Brian Fuse, flight simulator software developers. Ballistics expert, Gary James. David King, a forensic pathologist. Laser expert Steve Harvey and Lawrence Ryan. Whoa! Sharpshooter Mike Yardley. And historian Alan Bennett. We began our investigation by looking for the geographic coordinates of the Baron's last flight. Before we can learn how the Baron died, we need to know where. the exact place where the life of World War I's greatest pilot ended was not even known. Historian Alan Bennett has gathered every available scrap of evidence about the Baron's last flight. It turned out that witnesses identified four different fields as the landing site.
There were so many contradictions and arguments. So the key seemed to be the eyewitnesses said the triplane came to a rest near a big mound of earth in the field. If I could find that mound of earth in the field, that would give us a definite answer.
Then, looking at aerial photos of the area, taken just a few weeks before the Baron was shot down, he saw a telltale shadow in the middle of a field, cast by that mound of earth. Armed with his Global Positioning Satellite Unit, we brought Alan Bennett to France to survey the scene and find that spot. By a stroke of luck, we were able to verify Bennett's research, thanks to some long-lost local knowledge. Henri de la Place was mayor of Vaux-sur-Somme for 30 years. In 1918, his grandfather was mayor. He saw, and later showed his grandson, exactly where the Baron's plane came down.
Et a constaté cet avion de Richthofen était tombé ici à quelques mètres près à cet endroit.
Nous avons une différence très petite
différence
6 mètres. We have proven something. Now we know the exact place where the triplane came to rest.
Unsolved history has moved back in time more than 80 years. We now know where our story ends, the time and place where the Red Baron died. Now, we need to go back in time just 2 minutes earlier, to the moment when the first shots were fired, to reconstruct the Baron's last battle. At the time of his death in 1918, the Red Baron was a legend. A striking contrast to the anonymous soldiers who died by the millions in trenches. But for so famous a man, controversies over his death began within days. The incident at the French village of Vaux-sur-Somme soon began creating a mound of paperwork for the British military. Of the three parties claiming to have shot him, only one received any official backing. That was Canadian pilot Captain Roy Brown, whose combat report received approval with the word decisive. But did Captain Brown really shoot down von Richthofen? Or was the Baron brought down by a lucky shot fired from the ground? Telling those shots apart won't be easy. All the guns involved, on the ground and in the air, fired the same caliber bullet, a .303 rifle round. To get closer to the truth, Unsolved History asked historian Alan Bennett to retrace the Baron's last flight.
The Baron chased the Timothy, and Roy Brown saw what was happening, decided to descend to his rescue.
Lieutenant May, being chased by the Baron, came down the canal directly towards us. They were skimming the surface of the water. When they came to the corner, they didn't make the turn. They passed right overhead where we are, across into the distance and down to Vaux-sur-Somme. But Lieutenant May came down that street there, just above those red rooftops, came across and over the roof of the church, just missed the church tower. The Red Baron was hot on his tail, and they disappeared in that direction over the trees.
Only at a pontoon bridge, just west of Vaux-sur-Somme, does anyone see any sign of a third plane diving down on the Baron.
There was a crew repairing this particular pontoon bridge, and they heard aircraft engines, and they saw the Red Baron chasing Lieutenant Mate. Roy Brown did not pass this spot. He turned around and he went back that way to help another pilot who was in difficulties.
Could Brown's brief diving attack have been responsible for the demise of the Red Baron? Although it never received the official endorsement of the Army, this claim became the accepted history, the history people wanted to believe.
I'm quite sure that Captain Brown shot down the Red Baron.
To turn historical myth into historical fact, we need to recreate that final dogfight. A few planes from World War I are still flying today. Reenacting a dogfight with the intensity of that 1918 life and death struggle would be impossible with these fragile antiques. But there is another way to recreate the air battle in a flight simulator. Michael Selleck and Brian Fuse are skilled pilots, aerodynamic engineers, and writers of commercial-grade flight simulator software. To help solve this mystery, they will rebuild the Sopwith Camel and the Fokker DR-1 inside a sophisticated computer.
What's really important is that the pilot has the real challenges that they had back in World War I. And that's just on the aerodynamic side. And then there's also the gun side.
We'll calculate the aerodynamic forces on it. We'll deal with the vibration effects. And as we do that, we'll actually check for where those rounds are hitting.
Hitting someone with a machine gun fixed to the cowling of a vibrating, wind-buffeted aircraft is no easy task. And the aces had one secret to success.
In actual combat, typically you'd want to get right on the guy's tail, you know,
right.
Like 30 feet.
Right.
When Roy Brown attacked the Baron, the odds were against his scoring a hit. He got the sun behind him and dived down at full throttle, probably reaching 180 miles per hour before he opened fire at a range of about 1,000 feet. At that speed, he would have to pull away at around 300 feet to avoid a collision. He never got close enough to be sure of his aim. This is the encounter that Fuse and Selleck will recreate. But they're still missing one crucial piece of the puzzle. The exact trajectories of the bullets that Brown fired at the Baron. Unsolved History brought in firearms expert Gary James.
Yeah, the Vickers gun was a very, very reliable arm. It had a cyclic rate, the ground-mounted guns, of about 500 rounds per minute. And in the air, they beefed that up to 850 to 900 rounds.
To fire so quickly, the Vickers gun, like any machine gun, has to sacrifice some accuracy.
What we're trying to determine here is the actual spread of the bullets that would be fired from Brown's Vickers gun. We'll be measuring the spread, and we'll be firing it probably about 175 yards. Look at that, not too bad.
Oh, not too bad. Pretty good.
So what do you reckon? I'd say let's measure the far extreme here.
16.
Looks about 16.
But Roy Brown's gun would scatter more than this. It was sitting directly on top of the Camel's 150 horsepower engine, a very unstable gun platform. Just how unstable soon became clear to our investigators. By mounting a laser pointer on the cowling of an antique Camel, we can see how the engine's vibration would deflect a shot.
So this thing vibrates, shakes, there's the laser light, okay.
It looks like what we've got going here is that as we're applying power, we're getting a sweeping motion. But what we can see from this is when he holds the power in briefly, you can see that it's going over about a 2-inch dispersion.
Combining the gun's natural scatter with engine vibration adds up to a bullet spread of about 1 yard at a range of 1,000 feet. But we still have to factor in the aerodynamics of the plane, which adds even more bullet spread. Both the Camel and the Fokker were powered by rotary engines. The entire engine spun with the propeller. This heavy rotating mass acted as a gyroscope, making the plane hard to control.
And I dropped the ruler, yaws to the left. This made the Sopwith a bit of a beast to fly.
These gyroscopic forces would have made Brown's long-range shot that much more difficult.
He's going to be diving at about a 45-degree dive. It's a rather steep dive for a World War I aircraft. And as he does, he's going to have to lead the Baron slightly. And when he does that, he's going to be pulling back on the stick. That's going to be lifting the nose, but then the gyroscopic effect is going to be yawing it to the right. So his aim is going to be thrown off a bit every time he does some sort of control effect on the aircraft.
Unsolved History is about to head back in time and refly the Red Baron's final mission. Who killed the infamous Red Baron? Was it pilot Roy Brown? The man in the history books say fired the fatal shot? Or was Manfred von Richthofen shot down by someone else. Now, for the first time since that April afternoon in 1918, Unsolved History's Red Baron simulator is about to fight that final dogfight again.
This is wonderfully constructed.
The simulation makes it clear just how tough these primitive planes were to fly.
It's really difficult to fly when you don't have a horizon line.
In the simulation you are about to see, every seventh bullet we fire will be a visible tracer round. But every single bullet will be tracked to see if it passes through imaginary boxes around the Baron's head and torso. The computer will fly Lieutenant May's plane on a pre-programmed course. Pilot Selleck will fly the Baron's red triplane. And Pilot Fuse will make Roy Brown's dive.
Okay, fellas, this is the mission.
The simulation will pick up the action with Brown at 5,000 feet, just as he's about to dive to May's rescue.
And so we'd like you to come as close as you can to flying this mission. Do you think that's possible?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's get started.
All right. Begin.
That's Brown flying up there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's your altitude right now?
2,100 feet.
Okay. There's the Somme River down below, and you can see the little village of Vaux-sur-Somme coming into view. This is really amazing. Look at that. And there's the church. Wow, there's the near miss. And Brown is now coming down for the attack.
Yep, 1,300 feet.
Boy, look at that up there. It's like I'm in the cockpit.
And I'm gonna make my attack run now. Get in my sight. Hard to do.
Okay, there's tracers. And you're banking away. Boy, that was quick. That's the end of the mission, fellas.
Brown's high-speed attack is over in just a few seconds. The Baron diverts to the right after seeing tracers zoom by him. Exactly what happened in 1918. But did Brown score any hits?
How'd you do?
Not too good. We didn't seem to score any hits this time. Mimicking that engagement, that's pretty tough to be able to get a hit.
Boy, it looked to me like you were putting some rounds into him.
Yeah, and a lot of times it'll come close, but it's pretty hard to hit at that range.
In five separate runs, our simulated Roy Brown failed to get a single hit on the Baron.
The target aircraft is very, very small. And in fact, in terms of the type of sights they have then, it doesn't even fill the inner circle. And it's just very difficult to have a chance of even getting a hit at that range.
Unsolved History has shown just how difficult, almost impossible, it would have been for Brown to have hit the Red Baron. But could he have simply gotten lucky with a random 303 bullet from his machine gun? If so, is there any physical evidence that could confirm or disprove that Brown managed to make this lucky shot? There is. The mortal remains of Manfred von Richthofen. On the night of April 21st, his body was examined by two Air Force doctors. They took no photographs, but their detailed report allowed us to exactly recreate the Baron's wounds. They found significant injury to the face from the emergency landing, but only one bullet wound, one small entry wound in the right torso, and a larger exit wound near the left nipple. Their conclusion was that the bullet could not have come from the ground, a clear endorsement for Brown. But there was a second opinion. The next morning, two Army doctors saw the same wound and concluded only that it was caused by a 303 rifle bullet, the bullet that Brown fired, but also the bullet that the claimants on the ground fired. Forensic analysis in 1918 was primitive, but perhaps Unsolved History can shed new, more refined medical light on the mystery. Pathologist Dr. David King knows more about 303 bullets and the wounds they make than almost anyone else.
And here's the bullet. Fully jacketed, it's elongated,
The center of gravity is towards the rear end of the bullet. It had great accuracy over long distances, but once it enters the body, it becomes very unstable in the body and it would tumble.
While the entry wound of the 303 bullet is nondescript, its exit wound is a telltale.
But this is just the kind of wound I'd expect to see on the Red Baron from what we know of the descriptions of the doctors who examined him. This is what I'd expect to see if the bullet, still intact, tumbles in the body and exits sideways.
The tumbling 303 bullet creates devastating wounds, causing a shockwave as it drills through vital organs at supersonic speed. Any organ within 3 or 4 inches of the bullet track would be shattered by this shockwave.
Pass through the lungs, through the liver, through the heart, and I think certainly through the two main blood vessels of the body, the aorta and the inferior vena cava, producing devastating damage. I think you would have very rapidly lost consciousness, certainly under a minute, and died shortly afterwards.
This is where the timeline becomes critical and Roy Brown's claim falls apart. For after Brown's attack at 10:58 and the Baron swerved to the right, the triplane did not head straight to the crash site. Instead, it flew over the gun of Australian infantry gunner Cedric Popkin about 30 seconds later. About 30 seconds after that, it flew over the guns of two more Australians, Buey and Evans, sitting behind the ridge. If the Baron had been hit by Brown, he'd now have been unconscious. But instead, he turned and headed back for home, making one more turn before the emergency landing in the field near the chimney stack. 11 a.m., nearly 2 minutes since Brown's attack. Australian soldiers, Ted Smout among them, arrived at his plane, and the Red Baron was still alive.
Got him out on the ground, and he just said one word, kaput, and died.
Had Brown's bullet hit the Baron with a shot that test after test proved impossible, he would have been dead long before Smout got to him. The evidence is now overwhelming. The most famous warrior in the world in 1918 was killed by an ordinary soldier on the ground. But which one of the scores of shooters was it? Can we put a name and a face on the man who fired a shot that would echo through history? Unsolved History is about to try to solve the mystery of the death of the Red Baron. With the help of this high-powered laser and a light aircraft, all smoke and mirrors? No. This historical science experiment will determine which of the ground gunners could have killed the Red Baron. First, we ask ballistics expert Gary James to determine the range from which the Baron was shot.
So this gelatinous material basically approximates the density of the human body. So this is it's about 16 inches long, which approximates the width of a torso.
This is what would happen to a human torso if fired on at close range with a 303 bullet.
Woo-wee, look at this. Holy cow. Got all sorts of bits and pieces here. Here's what's left of the goo.
The powerful shockwave from the bullet blows the whole rig apart.
There's no way that von Richthofen could have been hit at close range with a full house load like this. It would have caused considerably more damage than was actually found. I mean, this is absolutely amazing.
Eyewitnesses said that the bullet that killed the Baron was found inside his flight jacket. That means it must have been a long-range shot. By reducing the amount of gunpowder in the cartridge case, James simulates that shot. A bullet fired around 800 yards away does this.
We hit pretty much inch below point of aim, which is exactly what we were aiming for. See if we have anything coming out the other end. Nope, nothing out the other end. We have a hole coming right out the side here. We're pretty close to the end, so that would give credence to the fact that perhaps Red Baron was hit at that distance with a 303 bullet.
Hitting the Baron from nearly half a mile is nothing short of miraculous. But someone did it. The question is, who? Historian Alan Bennett may lead us to the answer. His methodical studies of the eyewitness reports have given us a short list of gunners, those who had a chance of firing a round that could have hit the Baron in his right torso.
The Baron passed over Popkin, but Popkin fired at him from behind, so that eliminates Popkin there. As he approached the 53rd Battery, Buie and Evans fired frontally, so they could not have hit him from the right. When the Baron made his U-turn, he then put his right wing towards Evans, and we know Evans fired at some time in this process. The Baron then approached Sergeant Popkin again, who opened fire once more from the right.
Both Evans and Popkin had a shot on the Baron's right flank at a range of 600 to 800 yards. To hit a moving target at that distance takes great skill and some luck. This is how big an 8-foot square target looks at 800 yards.
You're a little bit to the right. Bit of wind.
The Baron's plane was just twice this long, and it was not stationary. To hit a target at this range, you have to aim above it to allow for the fact that the bullet will have dropped more than a foot.
Look at that. Well, we got a few hits on there. It's amazing. We fired a lot more rounds than that. Looks like we got a spread, gosh, I'd say 6-7 feet. And I bet you not 1/10 of the rounds we fired are on there.
And remember, the Australian gunners didn't have the luxury of a stationary target. Theirs was flying at 100 miles per hour.
They've got to react very, very rapidly, and they've only got a few seconds to get a number of rounds off. And that would be quite a lucky shot.
Could a bullet fired from the ground have hit the Baron's plane at the right angle to create the wounds found in the autopsy? Those who claim that Roy Brown shot the Baron down from the air maintain that the shot from the ground was impossible. Are they correct?
Oh!
To help us find out, Unsolved History enlisted the help of Mike Yardley, one of Britain's top sharpshooters.
Okay, guys, this is a Lewis gun, one of the classic machine guns of World War I. So you can imagine yourself leading an aeroplane, bang.
When shooting at a moving target, you have to aim ahead of it, because by the time the bullet gets there, the target has shifted.
So if you were engaging a plane, a First World War plane at, let's say, 400 yards, you'd probably have to be four fuselage lengths ahead of it if it was a crossing shot.
It proved difficult for us to arrange to shoot down a real airplane with real bullets, but Unsolved History has found a way to duplicate the shot without risking a plane and a pilot. For this experiment, Yardley's gun will be this high-output laser programmed by experts Lawrence Ryan and Steve Harvey. The location is obvious. The same place the mystery shot was fired in 1918. First, Sergeant Popkin's position.
I'll tell you what, this machine is absolutely bloody fantastic.
Spot on, isn't it? Anyway, it's pointing. It is.
We were faced with one technical difficulty. A bullet takes crucial fractions of a second to strike a target at this range, but the laser beam travels almost instantaneously. So to recreate that time delay, the programming will deflect the angle of the laser so that the sharpshooter still has to aim ahead of his target if he wants to hit it. Rather than firing a constant beam, the laser will send out 7 short pulses each second. Each pulse is a bullet. The laser scatters these bullets in just the same way the Lewis gun would.
Well, here's the map of the flight.
Alan Bennett briefs the pilots on the route their plane should fly, as close as possible to the Red Baron's final flight. Yardley dons a pair of goggles that cuts all green light from his vision.
As I pass the glasses into the beam, it is completely stopped, and nothing appears on the ground behind. Therefore, we shall make you wear these glasses whilst you're aiming at the plane, so that you can't see the laser, which would obviously help you significantly.
These pilots are about to fly back to 1918. First, a dry run to see if everything checks out.
Attention, James, first passage. Everybody's ready?
Ready.
Okay, they're coming. And fire.
Some problems with the gimbal.
The laser needs some adjustment, and there's disagreement about the route.
He has to pass overhead where
no.
We
are.
A few minor course corrections, and we're ready to test Sergeant Popkin's chances of shooting the Red Baron. To make sure the laser hits on the plane are clearly visible, the experiment begins as night falls. Firing at the plane from behind is just a warm-up for Yardley, as Popkin never claimed any of his bullets hit there, and the range is short, just 200 yards or so. The real test is the long-range shot, coming up as the plane comes back, heading for home.
Here it comes.
Running. Okay, and fire! You dive in.
In 11 seconds of firing, Yardley hits the plane 20 times. Half the hits are right on the cockpit.
I've shot just about everything there is to shoot over the years, but never a contraption like this. And I think we showed tonight that we could have shot down the Red Baron.
It seems clear that Sergeant Popkin could have shot von Richthofen. But there is still another man in the running. And now it's time to give him his best shot at immortality. Just as in 1918, a small plane crests a ridge, and a sharpshooter waits for his moment to strike. Unsolved History's investigation into the death of the Red Baron is almost complete. Snowy Evans was the last machine gunner to fire at the Baron. He first fired as the Baron approached him. Sharpshooter Mike Yardley takes the same opportunity.
Okay. Fire!
And gets a few hits. There's no way this short-range frontal shot killed the Baron, but he probably saw tracer bullets whizzing by. He turned for home and exposed his right flank to Gunner Evans. Will Yardley make the shot with the laser?
7-foot lead, fire!
Decker.
Did we hit him?
No.
Yardley missed. But our sharpshooter isn't ready to give up. He orders the plane to loop around for another run.
Right, coming around to the left. Here we go.
If he can make the shot, then his 1918 counterpart, Gunner Snowy Evans, could have made the shot as well.
Okay. That's interesting, because that one shot could have been the one shot that killed the Red Baron,
exactly.
Couldn't it?
It's at the angle, yeah.
Yeah, and that was just the angle, wasn't it? Right-hand side bullet entry, left-hand side bullet exit.
Our experiment shows that both Popkin and Evans could have fired the long-range shot. But who actually pulled the trigger? Our mystery may finally find its solution, not in the fields of France, but in Alan Bennett's treasure trove of papers. Unsolved History's experiments drove Bennett to re-examine the archives, and in one document, he may have found the pivotal evidence we've been looking for. In 1935, Sergeant Popkin wrote a letter to the official Australian war historian, describing exactly what had happened. He attached a sketch map, a map that had been lost for 70 years. Popkin actually fired only between these two X's when the Baron was exposing not his right side, but his front.
Sergeant Popkin says as the triplane was heading towards him and he was firing at it, it suddenly jerked, and he believed that he had hit the pilot at that time. But Popkin was firing frontally at the triplane, so it doesn't look as though he did.
By his own testimony, Sergeant Popkin eliminated himself from the running. Of all the claimants, Brown, Popkin, Buey, the only one left is Snowy Evans. A man of whom not a single photograph exists. A man who died childless, a drifter, in 1925. Was this the man who shot the Red Baron? If so, like millions of his fellow soldiers in the Great War, he has passed into history and oblivion.
We don't have the gun. We don't have the bullet. We don't have the evidence to cement this case. All we know is that Captain Brown was not the one that shot down the Red Baron. It was the Australian infantryman.
It is ironic that the man who killed the Red Baron may never even have known that he brought a legend crashing to Earth. But for one man, almost a century later, the passions of a long-forgotten war are still alive.
It was a great thing to see the Red Baron shot down, to see the end of him. It was a good thing because he had been a menace.
For the ordinary troops who lived and died in the mud and blood of the trenches, the death of the Red Baron was their great victory.
He was filled with a sense of invincibility. He totally disregarded his own rules, never to attack alone. This was the mistake.
April 21st, 1918. A day when David slew Goliath in the fields of France.